Very early in the morning, the chief priests with the elders, the teachers of the law and the whole Sanhedrin reached a decision. They bound Jesus, led him away and turned him over to Pilate. "Are you the King of Jews?" asked Pilate. "Yes, it is as you say," Jesus replied. The chief priests accused him of many things. So again, Pilate asked him, "Aren't you going to answer? See how many things they're accusing you of." But Jesus still made no reply, and Pilate was amazed. Now, it was the custom at the feast to release a prisoner whom the people requested. A man called Barabbas was in prison with the insurrectionists who had committed murder in the uprising. The crowd came up and asked Pilate to do for them what he usually did. "Do you want me to release you to the King of the Jews?" asked Pilate, knowing it was out of envy that the chief priests had handed Jesus over to him. But the chief priests stirred up the crowd to have Pilate release Barabbas instead. "What shall I do then with the one you call the King of Jews?" Pilate asked them. "Crucify him," they shouted. "Why? What crime has he committed?" asked Pilate. But they all shouted all the louder, "Crucify him." Wanting to satisfy the crowd, Pilate released Barabbas to them. He had Jesus flogged and handed him over to be crucified.
Pastor Azar, if you'd like to share with us now, that'd be great.
Good evening again. I'm pleased to share with you the Word of God. And it's just a challenging passage that we've read. I've called it actually the absurdity of Jesus' trial. The absurdity of Jesus' trial. And if we look at what happened, actually, from the beginning of this trial until the crucifixion itself, we will find different people, individuals, and groups that were around Jesus at that time. And I will look at some of them tonight, but I'll mention others who are not mentioned in the passage. Just like I'm thinking about, for example, Simon. Simon of Cyrene, I think you call it in English. In Arabic, it's a different name. And the two thieves, maybe Peter also, we can think about him. And everyone has different response and different relation to Jesus. Probably sometimes while we're meditating and we're close to Easter, it will be good to read these stories and meditate and think about these different individuals and groups and their response and their relation with Jesus. However, I would like to go back to what happened at that day of the trial itself. I would like to start with an important thing that happened. That it's not mentioned in the book of Mark, but it's mentioned in the book of Luke and chapter 23. And this probably when a Jewish crowd brought Jesus to Pilate, and when it's very obvious that Pilate was trying to avoid this issue from the beginning. Avoid this trial, and he did not want to get involved in giving any decisions about Jesus. So when he heard that Jesus is from Galilee, and he, at that time, Herod Antipas was visiting Jerusalem. Herod, the one, was ruling over Galilee. He sent him actually to Herod. He said, "It's not under my authority, since Herod, the king of Galilee, is there. So let him deal with this problem. Why should I deal with this problem?" So the first one in this trial who meet Jesus was Herod himself. And Herod, we read in the Gospel of Luke that he was happy. He was happy that Jesus was brought to him, because he heard a lot about Jesus, and he wanted to see him for a long time. And if we stop and don't continue the story, it sounds very, very promising thing that Jesus is brought to someone that he is looking, he's happy that he's coming, that he will meet him, and he was expecting or looking forward to see him for a long time. And the gospel actually adds there that, and he, because he heard about the miracles that Jesus did. But when we continue and read the story, we find that when Herod came and met with Jesus and started to speak with him, Jesus was silent. He did not answer him. And I'm wondering actually why is this happening actually? Here is the opportunity for Jesus, for someone who might help him to get away from the trial and maybe the crucifixion itself. But I think what we find out that Jesus was silent. And I think he was silent in front of Herod because the wrong motives of Herod of meeting with Jesus. Herod looked at Jesus as one who only perform miracles. He's kind of a magician. And he wanted to entertain himself with seeing Jesus, what Jesus is doing, or maybe hearing how he does these things. So Herod had no real or pure motives of meeting with Jesus himself. All what he wanted from him is to see something, to entertain himself. And this is sometimes we find it in our lives, in our churches, that we come here only to, or to come to church or any Christian activity, and we're not expecting Jesus, or not allowing, or not, we're not open for Jesus to do things in our life. We want to see what's happening. It's just a time of that we're spending our time. It's nice. It's good to be around this person and to see what he's doing, but we're not allowing him actually to enter to our life and change the way we have our relation with God. And Jesus at that moment, and I don't want to spend a lot of time here, Jesus at that exact incident, he stayed silent. He doesn't answer such people who only wants to entertain themselves, only to spend the time without being ready to allow him to work in their lives or to change their lives. But if we go back to our story, we also find two groups of people, individual and a group of people. And also they've been part of Jesus' crucifixion. And both of them were willing to sacrifice their convictions and even sacrifice the truth for their own benefits. And it's shocking actually reading these verses. And if we look closely to what, how Mark is presenting this and why are these people doing this, making their decisions, it's probably, we wonder, you know, this, maybe we'll say, it's not fair. This was not fair, what was going there. It's mentioned as we read that the priest and the writers, and then Mark says the whole Sanhedrin decided that they should handle Jesus to Pilate with false accusation, actually. And this is not a small issue. It's not a decision of one person. It's not a decision that was made by people who are ignorant people. The Sanhedrin actually is what we could call the Supreme Court of the Jewish nation. The Sanhedrin is actually, it was a court that dealt with religious and social issues that the Jewish people faced in Palestine at that time. And it wasn't only one group of people that we could say, okay, the Sanhedrin represent the Sadducees who are really cooperate. They have a lot of cooperation with the Romans, or it did not represent only the Pharisees who we say that they were very prejudiced and they only stick to the law itself. It was a place that combined both of these groups, the Pharisees and also the Sadducees. It has 71 people. It's not one person, or not five persons. This group of people could be the group of the wise men of Israel. These people that they can make the great decisions for not only one person, but the whole nation. They met, as Mark said, and they decided to handle Jesus. To whom? To their enemies, actually. To the Romans, whom they didn't like at all. And we wonder why. And I think that the reason that these people handled Jesus to Pilate, again, the enemy, the Romans, is because this person, Jesus, did not fit their agenda. He did not fit the place that they had in their minds for the Messiah. And the easiest thing to do for him is to handle him to Pilate, to the Romans, with false accusation. Actually, in the beginning, this reminds me about an incident that happened in the early ministry, or actually in his inauguration of his ministry that took place in Nazareth. When Jesus came back to Nazareth, and the story is mentioned in Luke chapter 4, and after doing some miracles around, and he came back to his hometown, and when they heard that he's there, they're very happy and proud. Actually, here's the person from our town, a small town of Nazareth, has 200 people probably at that time, that they know him, know his father and his mother, his brothers, all the family. And here's their hero coming back. And maybe not only their hero, maybe their savior coming back after performing some miracles around the Sea of Galilee. And he's entering the synagogue there. And they gave him to read from the book of Isaiah. And he took the book and read from several different places in Isaiah's book. And he read that the Spirit of the Lord is upon me and to set me to deliver the captives and open the eyes of the blind. And at the end of the story, after being happy with him there, but at the end of the story, they wanted to kill him. And I wonder why. Why that happened. And if we read carefully in that text of Luke 4, we find out that Jesus, after reading from Isaiah that the year of the Lord has arrived, the Messiah has arrived to save whom? And he brought only two examples, reminding them. He said, remember what happened at that time, that God saved Naaman the Syrians and the lady of Tzerfa, and both of them were not Jews, they were Gentiles. And they wanted to kill him. This is a person does not fit the place that they have in their minds for the Messiah. He's a person that should be killed. And they tried to kill him actually also on the road and between the beginning and the end. After raising Lazarus from the death, someone raising a person from the death, they tried to kill him. And they got to this point that they said, okay, we will behave in a way which is unjust, has no just in it. We lie. but we want this person to be crucified, to be killed. They were willing to, disrespectful group of people were willing to give false accusation because Jesus did not fit the Messiah role that they have in mind. So shocking. When we try to treat God the way we want Him to be, not acknowledging that He has the ability to, or He's a sovereign God, and we need to accept Him, not to dictate on Him what we want from Him to be. These people were not willing even to look at their books. They were blind of their agenda and the way they wanted the Messiah, their Messiah to be. The other person that comes into this scene also is not very much more innocent and is actually guilty as much as the Jews themselves. Pilate. By the way, Pilate was, according to the history, was a kind of a mystery. Many scholars did not find his name in most of the historical books until recent days, and I probably goes back to 25 to 30 years. Anyone who visited Israel here before? Is anyone of you visited Israel? Only one, two. And did you visit Caesarea Maritima? And there was found a stone that Pilate's name was found. And actually the Jewish archaeologist, he became a politician later called Gaal Yadin. When he found the stones itself, I mean it was and the name of Pilate in it, he said, in his words, he said, the church was right again because he did not believe, but then because of such example. Anyway, this is an information on a footnote here. But Pilate, the way we read the text, we read that Pilate was convinced that Jesus is innocent. At least he was convinced that this man did not do anything that he deserves the death. He was convinced as a governor, as a ruler. And he was one word he could set him free. And if we look at the text, we find that Pilate three times he tried to open the door for Jesus to go out of this trial. The first time when he asked him, are you the king of the Jews? Pilate was not asking him in order to get yes or no. Or he was trying to let Jesus speak and explain his position, actually. And Pilate is not a stupid guy. He heard about Jesus. He probably heard about his teaching. These Romans would have ears every corner in the country. And he was trying to make Jesus speak. So he can tell them, can you see this person is innocent? However, Jesus kept silence. He did not speak. He asked him again, he says, you say that I am a king of the Jews. Actually, in John, book of John, he says, he makes it clear that his kingdom is not from this world, so he was claiming another kingship there. Anyway, the first one, Pilate is trying to help Jesus to get out of this trial. Think, speak, defend yourself. Jesus was not willing to do that. Then the other time, Pilate saying, do you want, he was speaking to the crowd now, twice again to the crowd. Do you want me to release to you the king of the Jews? He was comparing between Jesus and Barabbas. No, and said, do you want the king of the Jews or Barabbas? And he thought that they will not ask him to release a criminal like Barabbas. And they said, yes, release Barabbas, but not Jesus. Crucify Jesus. And then again, Pilate asked them, what shall I do then with the one you call the king of the Jews? What shall I do? I mean, you're telling me that to put him, but what shall I do? Pilate asked them, crucify, they shouted. Why? What crime has he committed? Asked Pilate. A third time, Pilate is trying to help Jesus out of this situation. And if we don't know the rest of the story, we probably would expect, you know, said, okay, this governor is not going to listen to these people. He's releasing Jesus. But Mark tells us, however, that Pilate was willing to sacrifice the truth, although he knew the truth. His relation with the Jews and his concern for his position as a governor led him to give the unjust decision. It's absurd. A governor, without any real accusation, to give a person for, put the person for the death. It's probably difficult for us to think about these people. And I don't want to speak much more about the Jews or Pilate. I just want to conclude with questions about ourselves. What is our, now those who read about Jesus and hear the story of Jesus, what is our relation or our approach to Jesus? Why are we around him? Why do we get around him? Why we're in a church, or why we like to read the Bible, or what are our motives, and how are our decisions built from the truth that we know about Christ? Are we like Herod? It's like people who like to enjoy the blessings, probably, or enjoy the seeing things from Jesus, but not willing actually to give their lives to Jesus. Or what are we like the Jews? Who wants that want to fit Jesus in their agenda? We want him to do what we want from him, and if he doesn't do that, then we'll leave him, reject him. If he answers my prayers the way I want, I will follow him. If not, this is not my Lord. This is not the one I expect to be my Savior. It's not the one I expect to be. Or are we like Pilate? When we know the truth, how do we respond to this truth? Are we willing to establish a deeper relationship with him? Come to him with humbleness? It's a challenging moment took place at that trial. It's challenging for us in this time that we're living, that people are around Jesus, but for different reasons. And yet God is calling us to follow him. Not because of his blessings, but because of his love. Not because of our agenda, but because his will, that it's above our thoughts and wisdom. It's about trusting him, that although we don't understand what's happening sometimes around us, that He's a sovereign God. And He do what He does, allow things to happen because He know what is better for us. Are we willing to really, when we know the truth, live by this truth? I think we're living in a time that people saying, don't speak to us. Please live what you speak, and we can see it. Do we speak only the truth, or we live the truth? We are willing to take this cost, not only to search for the truth, but when we find it, to go by this truth. At the cross of Christ, at that place, the world is divided. Some who will stay on one side, rejecting, living their own ways, and others that are willing to take the cross and follow Christ wherever He asks us. May God give us all strength and the will to give Him our lives and thoughts, and allow Him to use us as His children and daughters here, whether it's in England or in Israel. And may His message of salvation be proclaimed through our churches and through our ministries. Thank you.